There's a power deep within every human being that can help us overcome great obstacles, deal with crisis and calamity, and turn our suffering into a catalyst for positive change and personal transformation, writes Brad Willis, also known as Bava Ram, in his new memoir, Warrior Pose, How Yoga Literally Saved My Life. Bava Ram, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much. It's good to be with you.
Well, let's start a little bit about your background. Pretty fascinating as I read through the book, and you started in television journalism, in fact, not too far from where we are here in Southern Oregon. I believe in Eureka, isn't that correct?
That's correct. I just listened to your weather forecast, and it brought back a lot of memories.
From this area. What led you initially to an interest in broadcast news as a career?
Well, honestly, it was sure happenstance. I went to Humboldt State University. I was born down in Los Angeles, and I wanted to escape all the clamor down here so much, especially since I came of age during the Vietnam War and a great deal of tumultuousness in our country. So I moved up to the Redwoods and went to Humboldt State and took a graduate degree, had visions of being a professor, and realized once I finished my graduate degree that that really wasn't me. And I was just driving by the little KBIQ TV television station in Eureka, and something compelled me to pull in. I walked into my blue jeans and flannel shirt and work boots, and the general manager greeted me and said, "Are you the one here looking for the reporter's job?" And I said, "Yes, that's me." And off took a career that fulfilled every one of my dreams on every level. It was unbelievable.
Well, you worked your way up through the markets, as folks often do in this profession, and you ended up, I guess, at one point in Boston and then later being hired by NBC News. You were stationed in different parts of the world. You saw the situation in Afghanistan when the Russians were there. You were working in South America, I believe, out of the Miami Bureau, and later in Southeast Asia. Give us a sense of some of what you saw and what the life was like. It must have been terribly hectic and dangerous at times, what that life was like for you.
Well, for me, it was the most meaningful life that I could ever believe I would possibly have, because I was actually on the front lines of some of the most momentous events of our time, like the Gulf War and drug wars and apartheid in Africa and the revolutions in El Salvador and Nicaragua. And I was able to tell a story. And I was able to, in some ways, make a difference, such as seeing funds raised after I did reports from refugee camps to help give medical attention to war-wounded children or to starving children. So it was deeply fulfilling, and I was never really impacted by the danger or the hectic aspect. I was younger then, too, and, I was so fulfilled that I never thought about those negative aspects of my career. For me, it defined exactly who I was. And being very type A at the time, my motto was, "I'll work longer and harder than anyone else," because I don't think I'm brighter or more capable than anyone in this highly competitive field. But I thought, I can outwork everyone. And I love this so much that that's what I set out to do.
Along the way, you had a couple of serious medical setbacks, and at least one of them not related at all to what you did for a living. Talk a little bit about those.
I was in Afghanistan in 1986, as you mentioned, with the Mujahideen freedom fighters up in the mountains, the only Western journalist in the country at the time during the war, and then down in the refugee camps. And after that, was able to airlift a number of children to New England for medical treatment. And I took a rare vacation. Type A doesn't vacation very well, but I went down to the Bahamas in the tropics on a remote island. A big storm the last night that I was there. I thought it might be a hurricane, battening down storm windows. And the very last one was up on a ledge. The handles broke as I twisted them. I fell about 12 to 15 feet, and I cracked the lowest vertebra in my spine. And I got up and kept working for 7 more years.
Type A personality, right?
Yeah, type A personality. Keeping this incredible pain a secret as best as I could, because I knew my career was on a rocket, and I knew if I gave up my seat on that rocket, it would be over. Or at least that's That was my deepest fear. So the way that I coped with all this pain in my lower back for 7 years was through painkillers, muscle relaxers, and drinking a little more alcohol every night, telling myself tomorrow it has to get better. It has to get better. Don't pity yourself. Think of all these warm, wounded children you've seen and circumstances in the world that are so much more difficult than your circumstance. Get over yourself. Move forward. So my career continued to ascend, but now my mental health, as well as my physical health, was descending into a place of darkness. I didn't even notice how I was getting darker and more difficult this whole time. You know, after covering the front lines of the Persian Gulf War, NBC News put me in charge of Asia, which was another dream come true. I was living in Hong Kong and covering this vast, exotic region. And 7 years into this, as I mentioned, I was in the Philippines covering a story, and I leaned over to look at some videotape with my editor, and that crack in my lower back widened open, started to cut into my spinal cord. I nearly blacked out, started screaming like a wild animal, was brought back to California for major back surgery. The back surgery failed, and I was declared permanently disabled and then placed in a body brace. So I went from this global life to confined in this contraption that went from the middle of my chest down through my hips with a metal brace down one leg. And I could no longer even sit up to eat a meal. I had to lie down on my back, and I couldn't walk without a cane. And I was even more heavily medicated, Vicodin, Prozac, Valium, Ritalin. And, of course, the emotional pain was worse than the physical pain. The loss of my identity, my sense of manhood, my sense of having any chance of having any kind of a future at all because of this pain.
We are speaking with Baba Ram today, talking about his journey from an NBC News correspondent through some serious illness, and then later finding yoga as a way to transform his life and improve his personal health. You can reach us at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782. Take a short break and be back with your questions after this. We're speaking with Baba Ram today. Previously, he used to work for NBC News as a correspondent in some of the political hotspots in the world. Back in those days, he was known as Brad Willis. He went through some difficult physical times and some failed surgeries and turned to yoga and some alternative practices to help him heal. He's speaking with us today, and we were just talking about the back injury. If you want to pick up on that, what did the doctors recommend the conventional medicine back in those days?
My only option that they gave me was an even more radical surgery following one that had failed, and very, very little chance of it being successful, only about 20%, or medications. So I chose the medications. I couldn't imagine going through another horrid back surgery after the first one increased my pain and crippled me so badly. So as I was saying, I just went into this four-year abyss of heavy medications, and I really became a master during that time of self-pity, of anger, of fear, and of inner darkness. And I also gained about 80 pounds because I continued to eat like a foreign correspondent, but I'm in a body brace, drugged, and lying around and drinking a little more heavily. In the midst of that darkness, my little boy was born, my only child. And I finally thought, well, I have hope. I'm going to be a daddy, even if I can't carry him on my shoulders or kick a soccer ball. And a light started to go on in the darkness of my heart. And 3 months after his birth, I got sick and was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer throughout my lymphatic system from exposure to depleted uranium years earlier in the Persian Gulf War. And the doctors basically said, you need to write your will. You won't live for 2 years. And they gave me heavier medications, morphine now too, and I felt so much guilt that I was leaving this little boy's life. And I spun even further into a dark place.
And as a process on that, initially, of course, you're receiving these medications under prescription. In fact, we had a segment here on The Exchange yesterday where we talked about how there's such a growing problem with prescription medication abuse across the country and here in Southern Oregon as well. Do you fault the doctors? I'm not asking you to like pin something down on someone, but the approach to Western medicine obviously didn't work for you. Were the doctors unable to see that, or were they so busy that they just kind of moved you along as they got to other patients?
I think it's the latter. I think the doctors are well-intentioned for the most part. I think the system is broken, and that given the financials of our medical system, the doctors only have time to spend a few minutes with their patients and write a prescription. And with a multi-billion dollar pharmaceutical industry, there's incredible pressure on them to do so. In fact, if they don't write a prescription, they could end up in a lawsuit if that was the standard protocol. So I had so many drug prescriptions, and I actually rarely took more than I was prescribed, but I had enough to just be stoned out of my mind all day long and still have jars and jars of these pills hidden away in my closet, thinking I have my emergency stash if anyone cuts me off. So yes, I think the system is broken. I think the answer is for all of us to find a way to take responsibility for our own health instead of trying to mask our symptoms with a pharmaceutical medication that only hides us from what's going on and doesn't have many healing properties to it.
Tell me a little bit more about what your boy said to you and how that sparked a change.
Well, now I'm dying of cancer, living in this body brace, and I get even darker, difficult to be around, except for that little boy. He's my whole life. He sort of lives on top of my body brace, and we play. He turned 2 just before the year 2000. I maybe had a few months left to live. By now, I'm 225 pounds. My face is dark and puffy. I'm a total physical and emotional wreck. And he finally got it in his own little 2-year-old way, and he looked at me and sort of trembled one morning and said, "Get up, Daddy." And it hit me in a place that I didn't know I had. It cut through the dense fog of all the medications and alcohol. And for the next 3 weeks, that was a mantra in my mind. Get up, Daddy. But how? I'm broken. I have cancer. I'm dying. Get up, Daddy. And finally, at the end of 3 weeks, I decided with my family that what I could do would be to get off all these drugs that had so deranged me and get off the alcohol and detox and die with dignity. And one day someone might tell my little boy when he was ready to hear the message, "You know, you said get up, Daddy, to your father once, and he did his best. He got off all those drugs, and he died with dignity for you," and that was all he could do. So I checked into a detox ward here in Southern California area where I live. 14 years now of heavy medications, cold turkey off of it. And as a reporter, I can tell you that every demon in Dante's Inferno checked into that room with me and tore at my emotional and physical body. And I crawled out of there even more delusional and racked in pain, not knowing what to do next or where to turn. And they came to me and said they were just starting an experimental Eastern-Western clinic at the hospital. They couldn't help me with cancer, but maybe the pain, ancient Eastern healing technologies, modern Western holistic modalities. I didn't even understand at the time. And I just said, "Yes, I'm in." And that began my journey towards taking power in my life. The very first thing that I heard was a guided meditation, a visualization tape during biofeedback where they check all your vital signs with electrodes, your heart rate, your skin temperature, your brain waves, and so forth. And by the end of this 20 minutes, for the first time in my life, I felt really relaxed, a different taste inside of my body. And all of my baselines on that biofeedback had smoothed out. And I realized that whatever healing capacity I had to take charge and play a role in that healing journey. 1 month into it, they started me on therapeutic yoga. I had never done yoga before in my life. I had been a jaded and a cynical foreign correspondent who would have rejected such a thing in the past. And the minute I walked into that room, somehow I knew it was the same deeper inner voice of the soul that really heard my little boy when he said, "Get up, Daddy." And I went back to the hotel where I was staying next to the clinic. I ordered all the ancient texts of yoga, thousands of years old texts, and soon discovered this isn't what most of us think it is. It's not just postures that we might do at a yoga studio or at a spa or gymnasium. It's a complete mind, body, spirit science of how to be a human being, how to harmonize yourself and take charge of your life and transform your life. And I embraced it because it was my only lifeline. And as I was studying and applying all of this as best as I could to my life, the clinic closed because the insurance companies wouldn't reimburse them for this alternative patient care, they called it. I knew three people in the program. Two went back to drugs and alcohol. My best friend in the program, bless him, he took his own life. I went home and I built a yoga room in my house. And I began a brand new journey of remaking myself in every way.
We're speaking with Bob Aram, and he is talking to us about the power of non-Western medicine to heal body, mind, and soul. He went through that experience himself after suffering a broken back and stage 4 cancer. And we're taking your questions today. You can give us a call at 800-838-3760 in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or if you have a question by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Do you feel that there is still a place for Western medicine, that it is beneficial in certain circumstances, or do you feel that we should integrate both of these? Where are you on that line today?
I think Western medicine has some incredible technologies, and it's badly needed. I think that more holistic and integrative medicine is equally, if not more, important and has to take a center stage on the entire medical scene in our country, because right now it's tilted too much in the wrong way, as we've already discussed. I don't think most of us are oriented towards taking charge of our lives and making significant changes that can cause profound natural healing in our lives without the side effects. And certainly that was my experience. And now that I have founded Deep Yoga and devoted my life to yoga and Ayurvedic medicine, the sister science of yoga, I've seen hundreds, if not thousands, of private clients and students access this wisdom and amazingly change their life through natural medicine, through the natural mind-body-spirit medicine of yoga.
There are in our Western society, of course, a lot of people have know what yoga is, and they probably have an attitude, you know, that like, well, the stretching is good for you, and they leave it at that. And there's some people that are very skeptical of some of, I don't know what you would want to call it, maybe the more spiritual or emotional claims that are attached to yoga. How would you address that?
Well, you don't come to anything until you're ready. And I think that's the truth in almost every path in life. But science now is proving what the ancient yogis wrote about thousands of years ago, and we're getting these scientific reports, especially from quantum physics, that say, yes, your thoughts do change your inner chemistry. You can create healing neuropeptides in your body like oxytocin and anandamide and dopamine, or you can create neuropeptides that over time are very toxic, like too much adrenaline and cortisol from being too stressed out. We now know that there's a profound mind-body connection, and it's been proven. My journey of overcoming cancer was by becoming vegan. I called it my organic chemotherapy, and I took 80 pounds off my body in that process. And also through meditation, through changing my attitude and creating a different inner chemistry in my body, I took about 1,000 pounds of darkness off my emotional body, because when you learn to cultivate gratitude and forgiveness, compassion and loving kindness and acceptance, instead of anger and fear and self-pity and negative emotions, you do create a different inner chemistry. You know, it's as simple as why an animal crawls into a cave when it's wounded. It relaxes. It lets go. It holds still. But we are all so stressed out and so always on the go and so filled with this fight or flight response and have such a acidic inner chemistry that it's difficult for us to do. But when we can make the shift and align ourselves with the rhythms of nature and learn true relaxation, true positive thinking, true positive eating as well, and mindful nutrition, amazing healing takes place. You know, we now know that the Western meat and potatoes and junk food diet is a primary cause of the 500,000 people that die each year in America from cancer and heart disease and stroke, not to mention diabetes and autoimmune disorders. This is all tied with our lifestyle. So that, to me, is not so exotic. It's scientific. It makes incredible sense. And it's a process of taking charge of our lives and owning our power and living our truth.
By your own admission, when you were a war correspondent for foreign correspondent for NBC News, you described yourself as a type A personality, which seems very true in that particular industry. Do you, as you went through your process and you switched to, for lack of a better term, alternative therapies, non-Western modalities to try to improve your health, did you approach that also with sort of a type A sort of vigor? I'm thinking that, you know, for a lot of people who are trying to change their health and they're sitting on the couch and thinking, well, I kind of know what's good for me. I should be eating better. I should be exercising. Sometimes the will to make that change just must seem overwhelming to them. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that. Have you approached yoga with the same sort of enthusiasm that you did when you were a war correspondent?
Well, I think that's an excellent question. I approached yoga with all that I had because I was dying and it was a lifeline for me. And that type A personality is still there, but in a much more peaceful and balanced manifestation rather than a more aggressive and ego-based manifestation. But anyone who might be facing difficult circumstances in their life and feel that they are not that type and they don't have that power, I'd like to say that that's not the truth. That's a false agreement with yourself. In my occupation as a journalist, I saw people rise up and find a power when they were in the middle of war zones and chaos and revolutions that was unbelievable. My book, Warrior Pose, starts with a little Afghan boy who was burned all over his body by napalm from Soviet jets that attacked his village high in the mountains. For 20 days, with that body burned from head to toe and no food, he walked out of those mountains to a refugee camp. And I could tell you scores of stories like this. The reason we feel disempowered is because we've been disenfranchised from our inherent power, whether we're type A or type C. We all have the capacity to step up and make radical changes in our lives. We have to find out what motivates us. For me, it was a two-year-old boy and a mantra called, Get Up, Daddy. But we all have something that motivates us, something maybe larger than our own individuated selves that can inspire us to move forward and not only heal ourselves, but to find out who we really are and to ultimately manifest our fullest potential and perhaps along the way to be an inspiration for others. And believe me, if somebody as broken and pickled on drugs as I was could step up and have these changes occur in their life, don't anyone out there listening tell yourself you can't, because you can.
In Western medicine, are we too focused on trying to treat the symptoms as opposed to whatever the underlying disease might be?
Absolutely. It's called palliation. We mask the symptomology. You know, as a very simple example, if someone is eating pepperoni pizza and drinking beer and chewing jalapeno peppers all day, and after 10 years of this goes to the doctor with a bleeding ulcer, the doctor's going to give him a little purple pill. And that's going to maybe stop his acid reflux and so forth, and he's going to keep eating his pepperoni and jalapenos. But all of the side effects that are occurring are horrific over time. The yogic approach is obvious. Stop doing those things. Eat natural, more alkaline food. Have a more holistic, whole food, plant-based diet. Learn to relax, too, because you have stress and tension, and that contributes to an acidic stomach. So most people, again, have been disenfranchised from their own power by a multi-billion dollar medical system that wants them to be dependent and to be consumers of these pharmaceutical medications and other tonics that we see in all the drug stores around the country. Whereas if you take charge and you align yourself more naturally, your body wants to heal and it will support you along the way.
We do have a couple of questions we want to get to here from listeners, but we're going to be taking a short break in a few minutes. Remind people that we are speaking with Bava Ram. He's written a book entitled Warrior Pose, a War Correspondent's Memoir. For many years, he worked as a foreign correspondent for NBC News in various parts of the world where there were some political hotspots. Eventually, he suffered a serious back injury and later cancer. And his conventional Western treatment did not work very well, so he went off on a different path, and today he's using the power of yoga to heal himself and to share that information with other people. If you have a question, you can call us at 800-838-3760, or in the Rogue Valley, reach us at 541-552-6782. Also by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Back with a couple of your questions right after this. We are back now. We're speaking today with Bava Ram. The title of his book is Warrior Pose, a War Correspondent's Memoir, How Yoga Literally Saved My Life. We have a couple questions here. One is from Alice, who reached us by email. She says, with existing spine injury, how do you know which yoga poses actually benefit your body and spine? Her concern is that some poses cause additional strain on vertebrae above and below injured discs. If you could handle that, Bava.
Yes, that's an excellent question, and it's really true. If you are injured, especially in your spine, you want to find a specialist in yoga therapy who understands the restorative and the gentle postures. And the whole science of yoga and its sister science, Ayurveda, holds that every person is unique and different, and that we respond to modalities in different ways, as we know. And so there is no one pose fits all or one way fits all. So part of the practice, especially what we practice in deep yoga, School of Healing Arts, is to teach people to really listen to their bodies, to really focus on their breath and profound relaxation, and to enter various poses that might twist or laterally extend or fold or backbend the spine very, very slowly, softly, and gently, and to deeply listen. If anything is painful, it's not helpful, and they want to avoid that. But if you can find that edge where you move just a little bit past your comfort zone and you can breathe and allow blood to flow more deeply into that area and the discs to massage the vertebra, you can start a process of promoting healing along, again, with profound relaxation, because pain causes tension and tension exacerbates inflammation.
And we have a question from Boyd in Ashland. Boyd, you are on the air.
Good morning. I certainly agree with everything your guest has said here. I wanted to add one thing. He said about that we've been disempowered by our Western medicine approach. I agree, totally. But there's another major source of disempowerment. That's advertising. We are all neck deep in advertising. We can't hardly live in this world without that. And it's all based on the premise underlying it is, you're an idiot and a fool, and you're going to make bad choices, so now we're going to tell you what to do.
All right. Thanks for your comment, Boyd. You want to address that, Bava?
Yes, Boyd, I think that's a very intelligent observation. Beyond advertising, I would call it mass media. We have surrendered our consciousness to television and to commercials, and they implant thoughts in our mind in return for the surrender of our consciousness. And that's part of the process wherein we become disenfranchised and disempowered from our own inner guru, our own inner wisdom and power. And so for cheap entertainment and a distraction from our daily stress that we call television programming, we get these mantras from television commercials implanted, and then we don't even know why we suddenly want to consume certain things. So we end up looking for hope and for a sense of contentment in all the wrong places. We end up looking at shopping malls. We end up looking for material acquisitions or alcohol or drugs or externalized experiences, where the only place we can find our power and we can find contentment and peace is within us, not without. So I really recommend that we tune out as much noise as we can, because, boy, just like if you put bad food in your body, you're going to get a bad result. What you're saying is if you put this junk from advertising into your head, you're feeding your mind junk food, and it's not healthy.
Forgiveness is a part of this process, I would imagine, and we have Julie in Ashland with a question or comment on that. Go ahead, Julie. Julie, are you there? We're trying to find Julie. No Julie. Okay. We will go on. This is Inward from Ashland and has a comment or question about Western medicine and politics. Go ahead.
Yeah, it seems to me that people have to go through this healing process because we're suffering from a culture sickness. We talk about advertisements, but really it's more like propaganda. We're all trying to sell each other something that we don't even know if it's even good for us or not, and then it just goes on and on. It seems to me the sanctity of human life is more cultural than individual, and we got to get out of ourselves, and go find a quiet place, and just if you're sick, let the body heal itself. I've done it where I just went off to this cabin in the woods and didn't just fasted and was able to improve my health, and it just seems that when we go into the cities, we're bombarded with all this radiation and politics and business that we lose track of the being that makes us human beings, and we just need to get back to that. And I think there's a political component to everything because our Constitution, most people think was just, it doesn't exist anymore. But I think that if we actually look at it, and maybe we could get back to something we have in common rather than all this competition.
Well, that makes sense. You called it propaganda. In the 1920s, the nephew of Sigmund Freud, a man named Edward Bernays, fleeing the Nazis, landed in Manhattan and on Madison Avenue and became the guru of Madison Avenue. And his first book was titled Propaganda. And in it he said, through advertising, we can control the group mind without them even knowing. And that's what's been happening ever since. So it is a process of reclaiming our own minds. And when we are overstimulated and we have too much input from mass media or the big cities that you mentioned, we can no longer hear the wisdom of our soul. There's a deeper knowing inside all of us, a deeper intelligence that we were born with that's not in the externalized ego brain, but it's down in the deeper wisdom of the spirit. And until we can learn to come into a place of stillness and silence, we can't establish an ongoing dialogue with our own inner intelligence.
We have Julie back now from Ashland. Go ahead, Julie.
I was on mute earlier. Sorry about that. Hi, I'm so glad you've covered the ground you've covered. I'm so glad your little boy said what he said to you. And we each of us who do look into this work, we're stepping stones for each other. And also, we encourage each other that, this is the direction and this is what we're creating together now. This is the reality. So anyway, I'm sure you've heard of Bruce Lipton and cellular biology and the fact that we create an environment, or if our cells are in a certain environment, they take their message from the environment, and that's how they design realities in our bodies, rather than it coming from DNA. And that gives us an avenue of change where we can actually redesign our realities and our bodies. And then through forgiveness, which when you're talking about this deeper wisdom of despair, when we can go in and take ownership of the things that are paining us, we can release them from our bodies. And I wondered if you heard of Michael Rice, who teaches Aramaic forgiveness. From the original language of Aramaic, which he has a translation of the New Testament. And it is what Jesus was teaching. He was teaching how to clear these energies, these disintegrative energies out of our bodies. And so I think we're really getting on to this thing about having a diet from our environment and all these inputs that are about mind control. And I guess that's what I needed to say. And I hope you'll write more books and keep going with this.
Thank you for
Thank
your
you
call,
so
Julie.
I think you're right, Julie, about the message of Jesus. But it goes even earlier than that, thousands and thousands of years ago. The ancient language of yoga is Sanskrit. Forgiveness is called kshama. The practice of cultivating positive emotions that change your inner chemistry is called pratapaksha bhavana from the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali written over 2,300 years ago. So this incredible mind, body, spirit science has been with us for thousands of years, and only now are modern researchers starting to understand how powerful and how true it is in the Western world.
We have a question now from Jim in Grants Pass. Go ahead, Jim.
Yes, very quickly. A person that has always tried to live a more holistic lifestyle in many ways, yet their, let's say, their life partner, husband, wife, a friend that they've trusted advice for, you know, all their life, is very skeptical of what they're trying to do. How do you work through that without that being a worse of an obstacle?
I've seen that happen quite a bit, and it's a very difficult journey. When you do discover this ancient wisdom and the intelligence within you and what a profound impact it has on your life, you want to share it with anyone and everyone, and especially with your partner. And if they are skeptical, it can be extremely painful. The main thing is to not to try to bring anyone along that isn't ready to come along, and just be, as Gandhi said, the change that you seek in the world. And if you just continue to embody these changes and be peaceful about it, and even be open to skepticism and criticism, and just let that go, one day they will wake up and see how much you've changed and what a positive impact it's had on you, how better they feel around you. And my wager is they'll start to get curious and want to know a little bit more about how you got there, because we all want this state of inner peace that's so elusive in our fast-paced and stressed-out culture.
Jim, thanks for your call. I wanted to ask a question about, let's say somebody is really has been thinking about this and they're determined to make some positive change in their life, whether they've had a serious illness or not. But they're intimidated, much like the person who puts on a pair of jogging shoes for the first time and heads out the door. What are some early steps that people can take to see some success in their life and take some responsibility for their own health?
Well, I really believe in the science of yoga, and I think people can learn more about this and find a way to integrate it in their life, which is meditation and breath work, mindful diet, mindful exercise, and mindful thinking. But the important thing is to set yourself up for little victories rather than a big defeat, not trying to do everything all at once. In fact, I often recommend with people that you make a list of the 10 things that you'd really like to change in your life, and then you prioritize them from the most difficult to the easiest, and then go down and take the very easiest one and master that first so that you have an affirmation and an empowerment, and then move to number 2 and master that. And you're taking little steps that give you little victories. And before you know it, you'll be able to take bigger steps and meet the bigger challenges in your life because you're on a journey of self-empowerment.
Is the nature of yoga something that people can really start on their own, or do you absolutely have to find a teacher to get you going?
Well, anyone can start doing the yoga postures on their own, but you want to really listen to your body. It depends on your age and your health, you know, because there are vigorous sequences of postures that are more a form of exercise for younger people, and there are more restorative and therapeutic postures. But the entire field of yoga, it's good to have a guide, because when you get into meditation and learning how to change the thoughts in your mind and positive affirmation and pranayama, breath work, and a holistic diet, guidance is usually needed. And one of the important things is to do it in a way that's always, again, empowering you, where everything is synthesized together. And you could move along a lot faster. You know, I basically did it the first 2 years all on my own, 10 to 12 hours a day. And, you know, that's a long journey. But not everyone has a broken back and is dying of cancer. So guidance, proper guidance is important. And just like there are a whole host of different doctors out there with different theories and treatments, there's a whole host of different people presenting yoga. And I think the more you can find those teachers who are really anchored in the ancient wisdom and have read and understood and taught the Bhagavad Gita and the Yoga Sutras of the Patanjali and the Upanishads and the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, and really understand the complexity of this science, that's the place you want to turn.
We've been talking today with Bava Ram about his book, Warrior Pose, a war correspondence memoir. Bava Ram, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
It's so good to be with you.
Monday on the Exchange, we'll talk about Southern Oregon University's new sustainable farm project. Then liquid natural gas opponents call on Oregon's governor to reject the LNG project. And then we'll talk with the author of a new book entitled Speed. It's about slowing down in our lives and reducing some of the complexity that we have. The producer of our show is Charlotte Duren. I'm Milt Radford, filling in today for host Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening to the Exchange, and have a great weekend.